Joining us now on the Super Celebrity Hotline, a real super celebrity, Dr. Oz is joining us. And, well, Dr. Oz, you've had quite a day, haven't you? Talked to the president today during the town hall on Fox News Channel. I'll just get right to this. How do you think the response has been thus far by the federal government?
It's gotten much better. I think early on, like most everybody, it was difficult to fathom how significant this could be to our country. But I think once everyone got the message that this is not a drill, this is the real thing, everybody mobilized. And not just the federal government, state governments, I think that they've done a fantastic job. Even local governments have appreciated that we needed to buckle down to give our country a shorter problem window. Because if we didn't do it now and did it in a month, not only would we have a much worse situation, it would take much longer to deal with the issues.
Yeah, what do you think about the president's idea that maybe we can get business up and going by April 12th, which would be Easter? Do you think that's too soon? Is that in line with where you think this is going?
It's feasible. I would have, you know, who knows, but I would have expected it next week. But the 12th is a good day for, you know, good day for resurrection, right?
So right, yeah.
I think we definitely need the week in front of us to get an idea of how we're affecting mortality rates. People shouldn't fixate numbers of cases because we're doing so much more testing. Dr. Brooks told us at the press conference that we did more testing in the past 8 days than Korea has done, period. And Korea is the pinnacle of testing. So
right.
We've really mobilized with that. So we're going to see more cases, but we want to see mortality start to taper off. They won't go down, I don't think, but they'll taper off. And then we have another week after that of continuing to hold our breath to make sure that we're on the right perspective. But that's sort of what China did, right? They really buckled down until they knew that they were starting to cut off or suffocate the pandemic so it couldn't grow like it was growing before. And then they began to slowly liberalize it. The other thing that China did was they focused on areas where there was a lot of problems, like Wuhan, but they didn't get the rest of the country quite as strictly because the problem wasn't as bad there. So I think the president has some opportunities to continue to allow New York to be super strict until we really deal with our issues because we're half the cases in the country, but allow, you know, West Virginia to maybe get back to what they're doing because they're not hit so hard.
Well, doesn't that, what I would think of in that case is that once it starts to hit in a community, if people aren't being careful, it spreads fairly quickly. It does have, it seems to infect three people for every person who has it, that they come in contact with. And would you not be concerned about places like West Virginia or Kansas or Iowa or Idaho that don't have the kind of outbreaks that they have in New York or in L.A. or California, I should say, Washington State, or even here in Chicago? It's starting to grow fairly quickly, but not as quickly as it has in New York. Would you be concerned that you start to see outbreaks there and that there might be an overwhelming of those medical systems? Because in those smaller states, they've got smaller medical systems.
Bingo. That's the risk, right? New York has had a catastrophe of cases, but they've got one of the best medical systems in the world. So my hospital, New York Presbyterian, is, you know, we've gotten really swollen, but like an accordion. You can sort of like a boa constrictor, take a lot of cases in. You don't have that flexibility in the other states. But we don't want to experiment. The reality is, if we can be aggressive the way South Korea was, in quickly identifying individuals who are sick and all their immediate contacts, so everyone is sort of taken out together and protected so they don't infect people around them, that's the model we want to use. And I think other states have learned from what New York wasn't able to do. We didn't realize how bad it was until it was already out. And I think in January, people were coming back from holidays and vacation and a lot of international travel. We brought it back in ways that we never anticipated. And as that began to explode, we were probably a week or two ahead of the rest of the country. The reason that this 15-day period is so important is it sort of puts a stake in the ground and says, okay, this is where we're going to start really doing it right. And we are. Across the country, we're doing it right now. And it will work because it worked in China. It worked. It's worked everywhere. It will work. The question is it 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks? You know, I think even if we liberalize a little bit starting around Easter and get people who are able to go to jobs where they're not risking themselves and their coworkers, we're not going to be back to normal by Easter. It's going to take a couple more weeks after that. You slowly liberalize parts of the country and types of businesses that are essential, and they can be performed. But listen, we're never going to go back to full capacity. You ever go to a restaurant and it says, you know, capacity 260 people, and you look at the space and you say, what are you talking about? It's like a frat party. Well, I think those numbers are going to be changed. I think across the country, we'll expect to be less crowded. We'll be a little more leery of being in large stadiums. I was talking today to some folks in the sports space, and I just can't see us having auditoriums full of people. I can see games being played, right, in large coliseums, but we're not going to have audiences jumping on each other. One of the reasons Northern Italy got crushed is Premier League football, I think. They were still super happy about La Liga, right, and they were all attending games and not realizing, unwittingly contaminating huge swaths of the population.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so you do wonder, like baseball, for example, obviously they were supposed to start on Thursday. Major League Baseball was about to open up, right, 2 days from right now. And that's not going to happen. They're talking about maybe June. I would guess it's more like July. And they may have to open without people in the stands as they just have to get these games in, because it's less likely that you're going to have player-to-player transmission in baseball than you would in basketball. You saw how quickly it actually moved in basketball. I want to ask you a question about something that a local health director said here. The city of Chicago's health director was on, and she was telling people that we have to be really smart about transmission here, because what they're finding, at least from the statistics that they're seeing coming out of China, a little bit out of Italy, and what we're also starting to glean now, because we're actually getting case studies done here over the last 4 or 5 weeks, and especially New York is going to be an excellent case study that will be studied for 100 years from now in terms of pandemics. But she's arguing that people who get infected are people who spend 10 minutes or more within 6 feet of an infected person, and that the real risk here is that you don't know if somebody's infected, because somebody can be contagious a couple days before they're actually presenting symptoms. So that's where the problem really can be. But you really have to have a lot closer contact than we're initially thinking here. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Oz?
Well, that's the big question that businesses are asking, right? So an employee gets sick, goes home. Exactly who were they around and for how long? So the rules are unclear. If you look at the CDC playbook, they don't tell you because they don't know. And so if you're running a company or you're an employee of a company, you've got to make some difficult choices. So like, as an example, if you spend, you said 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So 10 minutes at 6 feet or closer to somebody 5 days before you got sick, is that too much, or what does that, do you quarantine the other person? Where do you draw the line? I'll throw some numbers out at you. We know that the mean incubation period is 5 days. That's how long the average person takes to get sick once they were exposed. So that's the obvious thing to think about. But the reality is there are plenty of people who are 7, 8, 9 days since they were touched when they get infected, depending on their immune system, genetics,
and everything.
Some
people 3 days, right?
Some people 3 days, right? Yeah. If five is the average, you got to have people on both sides. So I tell people, go from the day you got sick, go back a day or two, and who are you really spending a lot of time with? I don't know if 10 minutes at 6 feet is the right number, but if you're sitting in a conference for an hour with somebody, that's close. And, and so those are the people you want to identify. And those are the folks who have to be extra careful. And I do think making sure they're not exposing themselves to a lot of other folks and are hyper-vigilant about even subtle symptoms. There's a paper that came out yesterday showing that of the people who are asymptomatic, a lot of them lose their taste or their smell. And those numbers are significant. Like a third of patients with coronavirus have some changes to their taste and smell. Well, that's a good clue, because it's the asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic people that destroy your efforts to quarantine. So being hyper-vigilant about that is good. But I'll give you a shortcut. Don't let anyone get within 6 feet of you at all.
That's right.
I know it's hard, but that's what we said. My show, we were able to tape for as long as we could. We finally eventually had someone get sick, but we kept everyone 6 feet from everybody else. And now there's some mistakes that happen. People run into each other in the hallway, but you're not spending 10 minutes closer than 6 feet to anybody. And that's one way to avoid those kinds of contacts.
Do we think that loss of smell and taste is a side effect, a long-lasting side effect or permanent side effect of this?
We don't think it's permanent. A lot of people who have head colds lose their sense of taste and smell, because there's a small little bone in the top of your nose that where the nerve lies, that's for smell. And if you can't smell, you can't taste that well either. So we think it's something being influenced there. It'd be swollen. It's not just coronavirus, but it's obviously for coronavirus, that's one of those subtle clues that you may not have much of symptoms. Because some people literally, no symptoms, zero. They have nothing that they can tell, but they test positive. Look at Rand Paul. Rand Paul had no symptoms. But he got screened because he was worried about this bad lung injury he had from an altercation last year, and now he comes back positive, and he was as surprised as anybody. And of course, people get upset about it. But I mean, if you just screened yourself and you didn't realize you had it and you test positive, what are you going to do with that information? You have no idea when you were sick, even.
Dr. Oz. You can see him at 1 o'clock on Channel 32 here, Fox 32. I've been watching you over the last couple of weeks as you've been doing this. It's really amazing how you've transitioned into this so seamlessly, because I know how daytime strip shows like that often can be weeks ahead of production, and you've done a really, really nice job of being able to get real answers for people. Before we let you go, I want to ask you about therapeutics. Obviously, the president is very hot on this whole malaria drug in combination with a Z-Pak. What are your thoughts on that?
I feel very positively about that trial. I actually was able to get the doctor that did the trial in France to come on my show. He hasn't been talking to anybody. And you mentioned the strip show. The only reason he came is his wife said, "I like watching Dr. Oz. I'm on in France, I guess." So he came on, and after talking to him and drilling him really about why he did this research, I gained a lot of respect for him. He's a top-notch clinician. He was able to show, just for the listener, that within 6 days, 100% of the patients he treated with that combination of the malaria drug and Z-Pak were free of virus. In other words, not contagious anymore. The normal time is closer to 20 days. So that data was pretty solid. And then I learned that there was additional data from China that was so compelling the Chinese government recommended in their protocols for treating patients. So it's an old drug. There are some potential side effects. They're not huge ones, but they're real. And you need to have a doctor involved with your care. There was an unfortunate gentleman who just read the ingredients on his aquarium cleaning product, which is not the same thing. It looks the same, but it's not.
Right, and
he played chemistry class with his body, and unfortunately paid the ultimate price. So I feel terrible about his loss, and his wife is still sick because she tried it too.
Right,
please just
right.
call a doctor, ask their opinion. They're learning about it like we all are. Personally, I would take it if I got ill. I've asked that question of a lot of doctors. I've not had someone say no yet, but I'm sure I will. And it's going to get FDA approved only after we do clinical trials. I'm actually funding the trial at my institution at Columbia, but we have other big trials that are ongoing. We'll either figure it works or doesn't work. In the meantime, when I asked Vice President Pence that today, he said he was pleased, he said, to say the FDA was okay with this. So just go ahead and use it the way it is. It's already FDA approved. And if it turns out to be as good as everyone thinks, fantastic. But for now, it seems to be a rational way to go.
Okay. And what are the side effects? You said that they are real.
The big side effect is an arrhythmia that happens because it changes the way the electrical pathways in your heart work. It's, again, not common, but it gets checked for. Again, it's known about because this is a drug that was approved in 1955. So it's been used for many, many years to prevent malaria. It's used for autoimmune problems like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. So we check the EKG. It's not hard to do. And just make sure that there's not a problem with it, and then you're good to go. And that's why a lot of doctors are optimistic that they'll be able to use this as a first-line therapy, because we don't have much. And as I spoke to the ex-governor of Kansas, who happens to be a doctor, and he said, when you go to war, you don't pick your army. You go with the army you got. And that's why he's using this drug combination.
All right, Dr. Oz, thank you so much. You can see Dr. Oz 1 o'clock on Fox 32 every afternoon. And again, you're doing an amazing job with this by adjusting to what's happening in front of you and keeping that production line going, because I know how hard that actually can be in television. And you have syndicators and bosses and other people who are probably fighting against you on that. So keep up the good fight.
Well, you know, I really appreciate you saying that. Most folks do not appreciate what you're saying. It's really true. I mean, taping a show out of your basement in a bunker is a whole different experience, but it's worth it. And thanks for acknowledging it. Take care.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Dr. Oz.